Hello and welcome to Life Matters. Cassie McCullough with you this morning as we hear a remarkable story of one man's awakening to the experience of emotion, maybe for the better, maybe not. John Elder Robison is a car mechanic, a former sound engineer, and he happens to be the brother of Augustine Burroughs, who wrote Running with Scissors, the traumatic account of their disturbing childhood in a dysfunctional family, which was then made into a movie. In 2007, John wrote his own book, the memoir Look Me in the Eye, My Life with Asperger's, and he spoke to Richard Adie on Life Matters about how his life was transformed once he'd had the diagnosis of this autism spectrum disorder. But it's what happened to John Elder Robison since that you'll find absolutely fascinating. After participating in a medical trial of transcranial magnetic stimulation, John's perception of the world changed in an instant. Suddenly, as he was driving his car home from a session of the experimental treatment, the world rushed in, and he experienced emotions in all their strength and variation for the first time. As you'll hear, this wasn't all positive. His marriage broke down, he lost friends, and he was overwhelmed by a sensation that he describes as like being able to see into people's souls. He's written a book about it. It's called Switched On, and we're going to meet him this morning on Life Matters.
Everybody's trying to tell me what is right for me. I need a drink and a quick decision. Now it's up to me.
That's the R&B soul music group, the Tavares Brothers, and one of the songs John Elder Robison was listening to as he was driving down a Massachusetts freeway in April 2008. It was around 8 p.m. and it was the moment in time when John's life began to split into two parts, before and after. John was participating in an experimental trial at a teaching hospital at Harvard Medical School in Boston. Researchers were investigating whether transcranial magnetic stimulation could change the way an autistic brain senses emotions. And this is where John was driving home from after one of his first sessions. John Elder Robinson, welcome to Life Matters.
Yes, thanks for having me on with you again.
What happened that night in the car as you were listening to what was actually a bootleg recording of the Tavares Brothers?
Well, it was the strangest thing because I had volunteered for this study and I went out to Boston and I spent an hour or so doing the exercises and tests before the stimulation. And then the stimulation lasted half an hour and then I spent like another hour doing tests and exercises and having the neurologist check me, and then some more time passed and finally I left to go home. And you know, I was thinking I'd spent 4 hours and what a crazy fool I was to think I'd be any different when I left there than when I went in. And I pulled out on the highway and I turned on the music and it's like everything was different in the sound. It was the most staggering thing because I had no clue in the hospital or walking out or leaving, that was going to happen to me.
You describe it as almost like a technicolor explosion of emotion.
It's funny, people now, they tell me that I have this condition, synesthesia, and I see music in colors and shapes, and I also taught myself to see the waves of music, and I found that was a help to me in my work as a sound engineer. It kind of made me sad that it had a name to describe it as a trait of disability, because for me it was an extraordinary gift.
Because what you were listening to was a recording of the Tavares Brothers. You'd been at the performance and you could see the music, you could hear every bit. I think when you were younger you said you could tell a Fender from another type of guitar. But you really hadn't been hearing the music in an emotional way? The lyrics never connected with you.
Well, there were two things. First of all, the way that I used to hear the music with such detail, it's true, I could stand out there and listen, and I knew if somebody was playing a Fender Precision, or he's playing a jazz bass, or a Gibson EB3, or a Hafner, or some other kind, or a Rickenbacker, I could tell them all apart by listening to them. And that discerning ability, which made me a success producing and engineering music, kind of faded away as I left music and went into cars and more mundane pursuits. And it was that ability which was suddenly switched back on after the brain stimulation, and it had added to it a layer of emotional understanding of the music which I had never had before.
And this was part of your condition with Asperger's. It's part of the autism spectrum disorders. So you'd been with this condition, and part of it you've described in this book, Look Me in the Eye, My Life with Asperger's. You said you were unable to read emotional cues, and you'd grown up like this, and you'd formed relationships, you'd had, you know, a successful life, and all of a sudden these emotions that other people were experiencing as well as you came rushing in.
It was really staggering. By the time I got involved in the TMS study, I had had 10 years of being aware of this Asperger thing. I knew when I was young that I was different from other people, but I didn't have a term for it. And in fact, most people with Asperger's in the United States that are my age, we weren't diagnosed until late in life, if at all, because it wasn't really part of the conversation for psychologists in our country. So I learned about it when I was 40, and after living with this for 10 years with this knowledge, I had formed an idea of what I was missing, and I had the idea that if something could be done to change that, my life would be magically improved. And that maybe is what made me so quick to seize upon the chance to participate in this TMS study when they approached me.
Mm. Describe what the treatment is like.
Well, it really is a kind of a science fiction-y thing. What they have is an electrical coil that's the size of a large cigarette pack. And they hold that against the top of your head. It's got some wires connecting it to a machine. And they send pulses of electricity into this coil. And you hear it make a pop, and you can feel it kind of tapping on top of your head. And it sends a pulse of electromagnetic energy through your skull, where it's absorbed by the brain, and it induces tiny electrical signals in the brain. So it's the strangest thing. It feels like it puts your mind in neutral. You can like sit there and think, I'm going to count to 10, and you'll count to 5 and forget where you are. And then all of a sudden, the clock chimes and half an hour's passed and you didn't even know it. And you're just kind of sitting there in a trance.
And there's no pain. It's not invasive. It's just sitting there on the top of your head.
Right. It's not painful, but one thing that happens that's really weird is if they're stimulating, let's say, an area, say, in front of your ear, they hold a coil on the side of your head. When the coil fires, it'll cause the jaw muscles on that side of your face or your eye muscles to flinch. So if the coil is firing once a second, you'll have your right side jaw and your right eye winking and twitching every second with the coil, which is it's a weird feeling, but it's not something I'd call painful.
Mm-hmm. And you heard your voice in a different way for the first time. What was different?
It had a more melodic aspect to it. It was more sing-songy, I guess I would say. It was a very strange thing to hear myself sound different. You don't expect that. You expect yourself to sound the same all through your life.
And
it was like I had breathed helium at a party, but it wasn't that extreme.
So had your voice actually changed, or just your perception of your voice?
That's a good question. According to the scientists, my voice expressed more range of emotion.
Uh-huh.
So yes, they said that it changed in their study.
Mm.
So, but you're right to ask how much of it is my perception and how much is what other people observed of me, and it's very hard sometimes to tell.
Mm. So you're in the car, you experience these overwhelming emotions. In a way, you're very exposed and very raw to the world in a way that you had never been before. And although this was exhilarating, it also came with, well, a great cost.
You know, I had this fantasy that the messages I were missing, because I'm autistic, they were these sweetness and life, light, these happy messages. And I thought, well, if only I could pick them up, I would be happier. And when this TMS began to turn on the ability to read emotions in other people, I was frankly devastated because so much of the emotion that I was receiving was angst and anger and fear and sadness and jealousy and, you know, and all kinds of stuff that just overwhelmed me and brought me down. And, you know, I listened to people talking to me in the waiting room at my car dealership, and it was like the conversations almost reduced me to tears. And we're talking about everyday conversation people have about getting cars fixed. So you can imagine how devastating that was for me to not really even be able to carry on ordinary interactions all of a sudden because of this flood of emotion.
There was one moment you describe where you're talking to a woman about a problem she has with her car. Now, this was 2008-09, around the time of what we call the GFC, and people were really beginning to experience financial distress. And as you were talking to her, you realized that the car wasn't the real problem for her.
Well, that was a really weird thing. It's like having ESP, you know. The thing is, realizing that people were scared about whether they could pay for something or, you know, scared and worried, I was able to give the right answers and I was able to be reassuring and calming to her. And the thing that was amazing is that I did that instinctively as if I'd always had that ability. But there I was, and I was 50-some years old and I had never before in my life done such a thing.
So you
said I would have just
to...
been, that's the facts, ma'am, and just been logical and rational. I would have never done that.
So you said to her, it's going to be all right. Whereas in the past, you might have said, well, if you've been maintaining it properly, it should be okay. But if you haven't, you know.
Yeah, I would have just focused on the car. I would have never even thought about the rest of it.
Wow. So this experience of the world rushing in, you've kind of described it in your new book as being, well, being able to see into people's souls.
That's really what it felt like. It's the most amazing thing. And of course, you know, you hear that and you're tempted to ask, well, how different is it from the way a person with a lot of empathy sees other people? And of course, I can't know that because I have no way of knowing what they can see and what I saw. I can only know the change between what I saw before experiencing the TMS and what I saw after.
How did it impact on your closest relationships?
Well, you know, the thing that really made me sad was that it made me see the depression that my wife at the time lived with as a mat that was just smothering me. And I felt like I had to get out from under that, and I fled from it. And we were actually divorced a year after the TMS, and that was a really low point in my life. And I also lost a number of friends, and that was a real low point in my life, too, when I realized that the things they'd been laughing at all these years, they were making jokes and mocking me, and I was the joke. And that's very hurtful when you discover that and you feel that you've been the fool all these years and never known.
So you'd been hearing the words.
That was really, really sad.
You'd been hearing the words, but not the intention behind them.
Yeah, you know, I used to say to people that when I was a little boy, I was disabled because somebody could drop a vase, and they would say, well, that's great. And I couldn't tell if they were praising me or they were angry and critical. And I would say that by the time I was an adult, I didn't have such a problem with that because I could judge from context. I knew that no rational person would be happy at my breaking their vase, and I could respond to that. But I was still played for a fool in a lot of social situations where I didn't know any better, and that really made me sad to learn that.
On Life Matters, we're talking with John Elder Robison, who's written a book called Switched On about the treatment he had called transcranial magnetic stimulation, which really changed a lot of his life as well as his experience of Asperger's. John, I just want to ask you one more thing about your wife, and without wanting to pry too much, but you say that she had been suffering depression for a long time, and that had made your relationship very successful because you didn't feel the gravity of her mood, and you're actually able to deal with the world for her in a very objective, calm way. It was a successful relationship because of that.
I think it was, and all of a sudden the balance was tipped overnight and it didn't work anymore. And that's really the tragedy of it, because I think that when people change gradually through natural processes, there is a time and opportunity for each to adapt to the other. But what happens when something like this changes a person overnight and everything's suddenly different? And I think that's a very sad thing, and I never would have imagined that there was a risk of this. I never would have imagined it, and I never would have imagined some of the things I'd seen in other people after that. I was in a hotel in Melbourne, and a fellow came to see me on my last speaking tour in Australia in 2011. He came up to me and he told me that he'd been a patient in one of Dr. Endicott's studies, and he said that he had read my essay online about looking in people's eyes and seeing into them. And he said he did TMS, and now he looked into people's eyes, but he couldn't see the messages. And he thought that it was a most peculiar thing, and he went on to describe everything that I had experienced, and yet his experience of it was totally different. And I wondered, you know, how could the two of us have such a very different interpretation of what was seemingly very similar?
Mm.
I was very curious.
You mentioned there Peter Endicott, who's a professor of psychology at Deakin University, who works in this field and has written a foreword to your book. So I guess the question that you just raised there is, firstly, treating any of the autism spectrum disorders as something that needs to be treated is problematic for a lot of people. Many say it should just be accepted for what it is. And also that the idea that you may have lost something of yourself when you underwent this process, which was different to this other man's experience. Do you regret in some ways having had this treatment?
No, I don't regret it. I think that you touch upon a really important issue, and that is that some people have heard about this idea of TMS, and they think that it's an effort by scientists to cure autism, and that's not the case. The studies that I took part in and the study that the fellow who was Dr. Endicott's subject took part in, those were aimed at relieving a specific way that some autistic people are disabled, and that is that we have a hard time reading the unspoken cues of other people. So the thought was, if we could improve our ability to read those unspoken signals, we would be more capable in everyday society, even though we would still be autistic. Now, there are other studies where they're looking at using TMS to improve executive function, to organize one's life for autistic people. And right now, in both Australia and in my country, TMS is widely used in clinical settings to relieve depression and anxiety. So those are all different things, and in each case, TMS is used to treat a specific problem, but it is in no way an autism cure. So I hope people won't get that misconception, because it's not.
You wrote that after the treatment, 5 years after the treatment, you found a new balance and stability. So you write, in that time, my sense that I could see into people's souls faded, yet the experience left me forever changed. So after the acute intensity following the treatment. Have you learned to integrate the information that you now can receive from the world, or is there a biological reduction in the impact of the treatment?
I think that both those things happened. I think the impact of the treatment dissipated with time, and I think that my ability to integrate the lessons of the treatment have grown. So what you might think of is TMS had a component which was really a teaching tool. And I could illustrate that with an analogy. Imagine that you have been colorblind all your life, and people tell you about the beautiful green grass and the beautiful blue sky. And you know the evidence of your eyes. Those are similar shades of gray, and it just makes you angry to hear all this talk of colors because it's not real. And your anger is what they would call a maladaptive development in response to your colorblindness. So then you go into a laboratory and scientists flip a switch in your head and color vision comes on for you, and you walk out of the lab and you realize this was all true. They weren't lying to you. There is beautiful blue sky and green grass and red dresses and yellow cars and everything else in the world. And then imagine that color fades away. Well, the thing is, just that short time that you had color vision is going to be a teaching moment that's going to change how you engage people about color for the rest of your life. And that's, in a sense, how it is for me. My interpretation of everything people say to me about or around emotion is forever altered by the teaching moment of TMS.
Wow. So the feelings can be remembered even if they aren't experienced in that same full flush of...
Absolutely. When you think of it in that way, it's easy to understand how that would happen. Or think of another example where you go to reach for the burner on the stove and something's wrong with the stove and the burner is 200 degrees and you burn your hand when you grab it. And you know, it isn't going to take a day for you to learn that lesson. You'll flinch every time you reach for the stove after that.
Yes. Now, John, you're happily remarried. You've reconnected with your son after a period of disconnection. How is life?
I think that life is generally good with respect to that. Of course, I'm getting older, and that's not so great, but...
Yeah, that sucks.
But I think that my ability to connect with the world is really remarkable. I think that since doing those TMS experiments, I've had the privilege of coming to visit Australia and, you know, India, Europe. I've gone all over the world to speak about autism and to speak out on behalf of autistic people, and I could never have done that without the ability to connect socially that started for me with this TMS. I think that it's not responsible for all of it, but I think it's a significant factor in my success.
Are you still fixing cars?
I am, yeah. But you know, in addition to fixing cars, and you know, most of the cars that we fix are actually British. We're Bentley, Rolls-Royce, Jaguar, Land Rover. And we actually have a school where we teach life skills in the context of the auto shop to young people with autism and other developmental challenges. So yes, I'm still doing that.
It's lucky the British make such dodgy cars in that case. Thank
it
you.
It kind of is, you know, it's that, it's the wood and the leather feel and the dodgy nature, yes.
Oh, John, thank you so much for talking with us and telling us about this extraordinary journey that, well, extraordinary experience that you've had that started really on a highway in Massachusetts.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
That's John Elder Robison, author of Switched On, an account of his experience of transcranial magnetic stimulation. You're listening to Life Matters, and I'm Cassie McCullough.